I'm Sarah Lane, filling in for Leo Laporte on this episode of Mac Break Weekly with Andy Anatko, Renee Ritchie, and Jason Snell joining me. We are going to talk about the iPhone 5S. You heard that right. The future of Springboard. I don't know. Might have to go somewhere. Apple and HTC have dropped patents because they're hot. Very, very expensive clock. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 325, recorded Tuesday, November 13th, 2012. Calm down, have a cookie.
Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code MacBreak. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, and other smartphones. Find out what your gadget's worth at gazelle.com. And by American Express Bank FSB, offering a high-yield savings account, the perfect complement to help you reach your savings goals. To learn more and open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/online savings. Member FDIC. And by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. Plus, more than 50 new features, including mobile responsive designs. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK11.
It's time for Mac Break Weekly, filling in for Leo Laporte. Once again, I didn't screw up bad enough last week. They decided to let me sit in Leo's chair for another week in a row. I'm Sarah Lane, and joining me, as always, is an esteemed cast of characters who are really much better at their jobs than I am. To my left, Andy Anatko. I'm just in a singing mood, I guess. Senior lead writer, Chicago Sun-Times, technology columns. Hello, Andy.
Hello. And don't put yourself down. Realize that this is how Leno finally got Carson out of the Tonight Show chair. A couple of guest hosting stints and then a really, really mean-spirited manager. And you'll have that gig soon enough.
Oh, good. Yeah, I just need the mean-spirited manager. There's somebody around here who could fill that role, I'm sure. Two wonderful gentlemen to my right, Renee Ritchie, the editor of iMore. Hello, Renee.
Hi, Sarah. What you say mean-spirited manager and then point to me, so I'm just hoping I'm not getting cast in that role.
No, you're Canadian. You couldn't do it if you tried.
All right, awesome.
And Jason Snell.
there is sort of the agent vibe about your dress today. You've got that tailored little jacket. You've got the it's like you're about to pick up the phone and yell at someone at Universal that you don't think that your guy should have a single decker RV. They should get a double decker minivan.
I said green M&Ms for Mr. Anatko.
There you go.
You know what happens with that. And Jason Snell, the editorial director for Macworld, Tech Hive, and PC World. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sarah. It's great to be back. And Renee scared me a little bit there. He's he's believable.
Yeah, he is. Okay. Well, everybody mind your P's and Q's or Renee's going to go all M&M on us.
Maybe he's more of a studio exec type. I want you to look in the camera and say, we love the script. We just have a few notes.
We love the script. We just have a few notes.
That's good. That's very good.
Gosh. All right. Okay. Don't cross him. Hey, should we start off with a little bit of good news in the patent department? Apple and HTC have reached a multi-year licensing agreement. This came down on Saturday night, I remember, because I was at dinner and we were like, oh my goodness, this is the coolest. Wow, what does it mean? Cats and dogs living together, which could, some reports say, net Apple up to $280 million per year. And I think some reports are saying that HTC might be paying Apple up to $8 per handset. Renee, what do you think? Is this out of left field? Does it surprise
this
you?
This peace in our time? Is that what we finally achieved?
Yeah.
I don't think it's exactly out of left field. I mean, Apple under Steve Jobs had that whole philosophy of going thermonuclear on Android vendors. And HTC, unlike Samsung, which has a whole plethora of consumer electronics devices to fund their war chest, and unlike Motorola that has Google money now, HTC is barely, I think they're around 1% profitable. So it probably behooved them more than anyone else to get the litigation just off their, out of their skies.
Jason, I know back in, I think it was August, a representative from HTC said, we do not plan to settle. We will take this to court as long as we have to. A bit of an about face.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what their motivation is here, other than to just get this behind them. And maybe it's Apple's motivation to make deals with people who aren't Samsung. I don't know. But the most important question is, where were you when the first armistice of the patent war was? Well, you remember. You were at dinner, so that'll go down in history. It is interesting, isn't it, that Apple is settling the thermonuclear war with Android. Maybe over? I think that would be great, because maybe we could stop talking about patents then, because they're really boring.
Wouldn't that be nice? I mean, Apple has all the money to keep a lawsuit or five going as long as they want. Andy, I mean, is this sort of HTC saying, well, we didn't have a really great quarter. We're not a dominant player if you compare us to Samsung. We kind of just want this problem to go away. We've got to fold.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, every business wants to be doing the thing that they consider themselves to be in business for. I don't know anybody at the top levels of tech companies that really like the deal making, the lawsuits, all that sort of stuff. They really want to be able to make the next generation of devices. And it's such a huge distraction for both companies to have to spend so much of their intellectual capital. You know, that you only have so many brain cycles available to you during the day. And so when you spend so much time thinking about, well, now we have to defend ourselves against this countersuit. Now we have to make sure that our executives are going to be available for this deposition. It's you really have to get personal in order to want to protract a lawsuit like that out. And as Renee said, for HTC, they're probably the most vulnerable of all the people whose names come up in all these lawsuits, where they don't have the broadest portfolio of patents they could fight against Apple with. Part of the settlement that's being discussed in public is that HTC also had some stuff against Apple. So it wasn't that if $8 per handset is accurate. It's not that HTC said, we're sorry, we stole your patents, here, have $8 per handset. It's that, okay, well, here's how much money you owe us for all the infringements that you're making on our intellectual property. It's good to see people who are making seven and eight figures a month decide that, you know what, maybe we should not fight over whose dump truck is supposed to be played with first in the sandbox. Maybe we should just settle this, get down to brass tacks about what is required to get rid of this and move on, and then get rid of it and move on.
And they get Slide to unlock. They get to keep it anyway.
Thank God. Now the entire world gets the benefits of this incredibly perceptive Slide to unlock technology. But soon enough, maybe you can build a phone that has a rounded corner on it with a, oh boy, what a nirvana we're going to be setting ourselves up for.
It's interesting, though, because HTC has never been the most Apple-like of manufacturers. Like Motorola and HTC have always had their own design language, and it was mostly Samsung in the early days that was conscientiously very Apple-like. And HTC is making a lot of Windows phones now. They just put out a 1080p Android superphone on Verizon today, and they're doing more of their own thing. So I kind of wonder if this is also a little bit of a, you know, get HTC out of the way. HTC's already settled with Microsoft. They want to go on and do their own business, and now Apple can focus on who they think is their best or their biggest competition.
Well, Apple may be getting quite a bit of money from HTC, but it does have to pay the SBB, which is the Swiss railway operator, about $21 million for stealing that mundane clock. You know the clock. It appeared on iPads, right, when iOS 6 came out, and it's very beautiful. And people said, "Oh, what a lovely clock! It's almost familiar." And that's because, yeah, it is. It's already in use. It was created back in, gosh, what, the 1940s, and it has been the icon of the Swiss railway system. When they noticed that Apple was using almost the exact same clock design. Yep. Which Andy has on his wrist. Boy, is that a nice looking watch.
That's a sharp little timepiece right there. Again, ever since the new iOS, I'm referring to as my officially licensed Apple iPad clock, the theme watch.
And there you go. And then look, now that's Jason's iPad. Those two are too similar. That's what SBB said.
Yeah.
And Apple said, yeah. What do you want?
Yeah. See, this is why I got annoyed at a lot of this, what I felt to be really self-righteous ruckus raising when Apple won its lawsuit against Samsung, because a lot of the broader points being argued were about Samsung quite literally saying, well, let's make a phone that looks exactly like the iPhone and maybe confuse people a little bit, at least with our first attempts at making a multi-touch phone. But so much of it was just the idea that the assertion that every single thing that every company does should be absolutely original. It's not possible for someone to just simply decide that something is a really interesting idea, that we're going to take it and mix it up and make it our own. And also the idea that Apple never, ever, ever does anything like that. And so it's not that the appearance of this clock face in the app was a condemnation of everything that Apple was doing. It's just an acknowledgement and an evidence that this is how things get designed. You see things in the world that seem to work really, really well, and then you try to, ideally, you adapt that and let that inform your own designs. Sometimes, as happens here, it's not even adapting. It's, hey, that's a great watch face. We should make our own watch face exactly like that. And it's not because Apple is incapable of designing their own watch faces. It's not because they wanted to bully the Swiss railway system. It's because they didn't really think it was stealing. They thought that they would simply be acknowledging a really, really great design with a non-competitive product. So, but that's really, it really is part of how design works. You just really do, so much of it is just looking at stuff in the wild, deciding that's a really good thing. How can we let that inform our own product?
It's absolutely true, although it is different if you are a phone maker and you say, I like the look of that clock, versus you're a phone maker and you say, I like the look of that competitive phone, right? I mean, that's the difference. But sure, inspiration, everything's about synthesis and learning and changing. I think in this case, my guess is that somebody at Apple saw that clock and thought it was cool and thought they'd make a digital representation of it and didn't actually realize that they were going to need to license it. And I think Apple does the right thing, right? They're like, we like your clock and we did lift it, so we're going to give you some money. Fair enough.
It's like, seems like their usual operating procedure is to, instead of begging forgiveness, they pay you off and then they ask permission later. The calculator has been a Braun calculator on iOS since it first launched, and there was no big story about them paying off Braun, so maybe they considered this similar. It does seem strange that they'd pay $21 million for a clock, but they must have really loved that design.
Well, not only that, but remember that one of the hitches above this was, it wasn't just that this was an iconic design that's been on the railway system for 60 years. It is, as you see, it's a design that they actually pay a license, that other companies pay a licensing fee for. So if they want this watch company to continue to pay money for this design, they really did have to go against Apple and say, no, you can't just simply get that cool round red sweep second hand.
Well, they could have changed the clock app to be something different, but at that point they would probably be sued for damages and they'd need to pay them anyway because they did ship it in iOS 6. So at that point, I think Apple and Apple's lawyers had a conversation about what it's worth, and they said, well, we like it. This way we don't have to change it. Let's just pay them. And honestly, they have so much cash that why not just do the right thing and say we love it so much we want it to be, you know, permanently a part of our clock app. That seems fair.
Well, think how much better the Swiss railway system will run now with $21 million. I mean, what a mess it is now. Nothing's on time. You know the Swiss.
Yeah, they're not very timely. They're not time-oriented people, the Swiss.
Maybe they'll clean up their trains a little bit, junk everywhere.
More of their effort into protecting the Pope.
Yeah, fill all the holes in that cheese, too. What the hell? Talk about a lack of attention to detail.
Right, and your chocolate sucks. Switzerland, it's terrible.
I get so much email.
The Swiss. We've made the Swiss angry. You know, that's almost as bad as making Canadians angry at you.
Yeah, ouch. I mean, if you get them off neutral ground, you've really done something wrong. Insult their
Don't
trains.
Make them angry.
That's the way to do it.
Guys are lucky we're clinging to the border for warmth.
Apple's head of internet software and services, Eddie Q, has joined the board of directors at what seems like an unlikely company, maybe, unless you're a conspiracy theorist, Ferrari. The Ferrari board of directors now welcomes Eddie Q, and Apple Insider says, does it mean Apple's now going to be part of a a Ferrari car? Are we going to be able to talk to our Ferraris and have Apple inside it? You're all laughing. Well, is it just a dream?
Well, I mean, it's... Well, it is a good fit because I think that only a company like Ferrari is accustomed to the high markups that Apple is used to on their products. But yeah, I mean, what the hell is Apple going to do with a car? We can't even agree that they're going to build a TV set, which is at least marginally associated with their interests. It is fun when you look at you realize that all these once you achieve a certain like 2-star or 3-star general level in any corporation, then you start working for other companies and serving on their boards as well. And so when you see how much the brain trust is sort of a shared brain trust between companies of a higher level, it is amazing to find out that this guy, it's not enough that he works for one of the coolest companies on the planet. He also has to work for a company that builds race cars. And if that guy ever had like a really, really people sucking up to him for his Christmas card list before, this guy can hook you up with both the next iPhone and the next supercar. I think he's going to have to start screening his calls very soon.
Is it too much to wish that Apple could get integrated in cars? So, I mean, look at Pandora. Pandora, there was a certain percentage that they had made public the other day. It was something like 38% of their users are actually accessing Pandora through their car because Pandora is so well integrated into some of the new vehicle models and even aftermarket radio stereos that people are putting into their cars. I would love that with at least some of my Apple services.
There's different levels of integration. I mean, if you look, there's Windows software for cars, which runs Sync, and there's QNX, which is owned by BlackBerry now, that's embedded in a lot of cars. Apple at WWDC had that little slide up showing basically using a Bluetooth button as a Siri control in cars. But I think if they did get into cars, it wouldn't be with Ferrari, because Apple usually, their strength is mainstreaming technology. It's taking things that are niche or complicated or just aren't accessible to the mainstream and putting them in places where the mainstream people can find it. So I would expect they'd start with a much bigger consumer brand of cars, maybe a Toyota or a Honda or a Chrysler or something, and work from there.
And I think that Apple, you know, I don't think Apple wants to build a product just for the car. I think that they just aren't focused on that. But we did see with the iPod Connect stuff that recently got actually deprecated with the release of the Lightning connector, they were trying to basically put an iPod menu on your car's menu. And it wouldn't surprise me if where Apple goes next with car stuff is like literally a connector, a Lightning connector that does video out and has support for basically touchscreen input. So you could essentially bring up an iPhone or an iPad on a car's touchscreen and use it in that fashion. Because I don't think Apple wants to make a custom anything for a car, but that's something that maybe they could do. And my car's got a little flat screen. I think that's where a lot of these cars are going. And imagine if Apple just said, look, you can just plug in your iPhone and boom, it'll work with your touchscreen. But beyond that, I just have a hard time seeing that they'll do much more than that. They pick their spots, and I don't think cars, I think they want to be sort of minimally compatible, and then beyond that, I'm not sure they care.
Also, they want to own the whole widget, and I don't think they'd ever have a partnership with a car company unless they could really control every aspect of the whole experience. And then you get down to the idea that now we have a 7.9-inch tablet that is perfectly sized for car dashboard. Maybe they would be adding a little bit more infrastructure to make it a little easier to add hands-free controls to the AV experience. But it seems like a problem that doesn't really need a complicated solution, does it?
Apple's also doing this thing with Siri where they're lining up, they're brokering deals with providers like OpenTable and Yelp and now with Fandango. And maybe one day they'll make a deal with an app that runs on the car with specific brand apps, because a lot of major car companies now have their own apps. And you'll be able to use Siri integration so you can have natural language control over your music and other stuff while you're driving. But I think both Jason and Andy are right on with that.
Yeah, so the Fandango app, that's part of 6.1, right? That's now out to developers. Not live for the general public, where if I was to say, Siri, book me a reservation for this movie at this time, I could at least get to the Fandango app to the point of purchase, right?
Yeah, correct.
That's great. I mean, I don't actually use Fandango all that much. I don't know about the rest of you, but that's at least something that is a transaction I am making regularly because I go to a lot of movies. That's fun. At least as good as using OpenTable with a little help from Siri to get a table booked for two.
I mean, that's exactly it. Right now, you can find out about dinner reservations using Siri, but you get offloaded to the OpenTable app to complete the booking. And right now, you can find out all about movies, but you're stuck there. You can't. There's no actionable thing that you can do afterwards. And when Fandango comes online, you'll be able to take that next step. And we'll probably see Apple making deals with other transactional companies to handle all the other, you know, there's sports in Siri, so maybe there'll be different sports ticket providers built in as well one day.
Mm. All right, well, we've got quite a bit more news in a variety of categories because yeah, Apple news never stops. But first, I think we should kick it over to Leo. He's just sitting patiently in his office waiting for me to tell us a little bit about one of our first sponsors.
Excuse me, if you don't mind, I'd love to interrupt Mac Break Weekly briefly for just a moment to talk about our sponsor, GoToMeeting, from the folks at Citrix. GoToMeeting is great for people who use iPads. It's a way you can attend a meeting, meet face-to-face with your team, your clients, on an iPad. GoToMeeting is amazing. GoToMeeting with HD faces really is a critical technology. GoToMeeting's always had the best screen sharing. But now they also have a camera, and you can use the camera with a sync, just a click, your webcam and a click, and you're suddenly teleconferencing in high def video. I am such a fan of GoToMeeting. You can meet and collaborate anywhere, even present from an iPad, which is so cool. That iPad app, absolutely free. On the iPhone, too. Visit GoToMeeting.com right now and take a look at all the things you can do with GoToMeeting. HD Faces is cool because you see your clients and colleagues. You see their expressions, their body language, their face. It's how you build trust, rapport. It's how you sell. It's how you work together. It's GoToMeeting. Get on the same page, literally, with GoToMeeting. Try it right now. Absolutely free. 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. And the promo code, make sure you click that link and put in MacBreak so we get credit. GoToMeeting.com. Use the offer code MacBreak. Now we go back to MacBreak Weekly.
Okay, the chat room got me. Leo's not really sitting in his office right now. He's on vacation. He's cruising Australia or something really fun. So I'm sorry. I shouldn't have lied. Hey, so this is kind of cool. Apple is apparently taking a page out of the Google book and giving employees some time to work on their own projects. It's kind of like Google's 20% time. This is the Wall Street Journal's Jessica Lessa reporting. And this would be allowing anybody who works at Apple, I assume, to devote 20% of their work time to their own projects or their own hacks for the good of the company. But this is not something that would have happened under Steve Jobs. He didn't really want people to be doing their own thing. He wanted to control the experience.
Well, and the report isn't really 20% for Apple, though, isn't it? Isn't it like 2 weeks or something? You get a 2 week project time.
2 weeks out of the normal work schedule, whatever that means.
And it's not everybody. It's only certain people.
Yeah.
So just the really talented people get to take a couple weeks and make a cool hack.
You hear a lot about a couple Apple engineers go off and they build an app and it ends up being so great that it becomes a standard app or a standard part of iOS. And I think that may be what they're going for here, is letting people who've got an idea for something that they think might be cool actually go and pursue it a little bit, which is a great idea. It's not the same as Google's time, which is sort of every week I'm going to set aside some time. It's more focused. And I mean, there could be some cool stuff that comes out of it. And I think it's also just to let those Apple employees who are frustrated because they're so focused on what they're doing for their regular job and they've got these big ideas to try something else and see what can happen. In a couple of weeks, a few people could make something that could end up being a standard part of Mac OS or iOS down the road.
Yeah. That's the take that I got from it too, because it's one thing to say that what Google does is a lot more broad in that it tries to the larger goal of it is to keep their employees from burning out and feeling as though they need to take a year-long sabbatical to attend to a personal project, or just get so burned out at Google they said, you know, I just want to leave right now because I can't be focused on the same thing time and time and time again. I would like to see a lot more of the details about how this project, how the system is going to work at Apple, because as Jason said, if it really is an idea where it allows people to pursue side projects, but since you're but if you're still doing that on company time, and Apple can say, well, thank you for developing this incredibly great podcasting app, now we own it because you did it at your desk, you used our photocopier to make silly faces and emails to other people while trying to get their opinions on this product, so glad you enjoyed your time off, now we'll take your app away from you. It's one thing to, it's not exactly, if you want to take 2 weeks off to go, help, create clean water in Central America. We'd love you to do that and come back, and your job will be waiting for you when you come back.
I think one of the other important things here is now that, you know, people said a lot about when Steve Jobs was gone from Apple, you wouldn't have the high highs, but you wouldn't have the low lows as well. It's a much more normalized company. It's sort of like now that Star Wars is owned by Disney. You may not get Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, but you won't get the prequels either. And Scott Forstall was a very powerful personality who had a lot of ideas. And exactly what Jason and Andy said, often teams of very small teams, even two people, would come up with apps or ideas that would find their way into iOS. And now that you have a more normalized company, giving people time to start coming up with creative, different things so that maybe future versions of iOS do have a freshness to them or a new direction, I think is a huge positive.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you love to see a sort of like commune aspect to a lot of these, to a lot of these operating systems and apps, where it's not just a case of there's a project manager, there's a timeline, there's a punch list of things that have to be done. There's a great thing that happens when, if you've ever had like a family campsite, you know, where you just, you get there 1 year and you see that, oh, wow, that roof looks a little bit patchy. No one has contracted me to do this, but I'm just going to fix that because it's obvious to me that that needs to be fixed. So if you have the ability to simply look around and say, oh, man, we need to do something about the way that the podcast app downloads new, discovers and downloads new episodes, I'm going to fix that myself, and then I'm just going to put it out there on our server. And if anybody here in the company who thinks that's a good idea, they can use it. Otherwise, I'm just glad that I now personally have a copy of this app that works the way that I wanted to.
I'm going to fix Game Center. Give me 2 weeks and that thing's going to be solid.
What is going on with Game Center?
Why are these piles of felt of torn up felt in the dumpster today? Oh, well, Jenkins had the week off. He decided to finally de-skeumorphize the Game Center app.
I think the biggest problem with Game Center is that Apple doesn't have any Game Center apps built into the iPhone or in the store, which means that any problems with them are going to be found first and most painfully by developers. And when Lauren Brichter made Letterpress, he went all in. He used it for turn-based gaming and for matchmaking. And Apple is not a services company like Google, and it didn't seem to be able to handle the load. So, I mean, if someone does have 2 weeks coming up and they want to re-architect that, that'd be fabulous.
I would also appreciate that. Game Center, yeah. It should just work, right? Hey, should we talk about Apple and the company that they still really hate, Samsung? Samsung reportedly has decided to raise prices for the A6 chips that you see in the iPhone and iPads. While they still can, I think they've got a contract through 2014. And although Apple is definitely experimenting with other companies as alternatives, Samsung just has can meet the production demand better than the others. Apple really relies on Samsung, at least to build these processors. They're now custom designed by Apple. But Samsung wants more money. I'm not too surprised by this. I figure Samsung should probably ask for as much as it thinks it can while Apple still doesn't have another option. I mean, the option, I guess, would be to just make fewer devices quickly, and that doesn't work either.
I mean, it's good business in the sense that if they're the only supplier who can give Apple what it wants, then they can charge whatever. It's bad business in the sense that they're, by gouging them potentially, they're basically kissing off their business, and they may just have decided that there's no way Apple's going to use them as a supplier in the long term anyway. But that's the risk, right? Is that, I mean, they're different parts of Samsung, and they're the parts that do phones and compete with Apple, and then they're the parts that make microprocessors. And, you know, this is an example of maybe the one side kind of crossing over and souring the relationship on the other side. And, you know, I don't know. Samsung's downside is that they're going to lose this major customer when their contract expires. And I guess maybe they've decided that that's going to happen anyway, so they might as well make as much money as they can out of their competitor while they can.
Any really reasons? Go ahead.
Do we really know the reasons behind the markup?
No, I mean, this is what's being reported. I know The Verge said, well, you know, Samsung just made a multi-billion dollar investment into one of its plants in Texas. Maybe this is just a case of Samsung saying, hey, you know, we've got costs too, and maybe we felt that Apple was getting too good of a deal. So there are a lot of reasons for this, but I think it's almost impossible not to say, well, these two companies have a lot to fight about. So if Samsung doesn't think that they're around for the long term, why not just get more money?
But it is an incomplete report. I mean, it's entirely possible that Apple knew this was going to happen and that this was part of the discussed arrangement with Samsung's microprocessor unit in upgrading their factory in the U.S. Or maybe Apple said, look, we want to make these in Texas, so please upgrade the factory and we'll pay, whatever. We don't know that detail, whether this is really just Samsung screwing with Apple or not. And so it's hard to say. I mean, it could be. The relationship with the companies is so bad. At the same time, there's so much money changing hands where Apple is buying Samsung's products that, you know, that's always the thing to be on alert for, is it's a company making bad business decisions because of emotion or not. And it's hard to say whether that's really happening here or not. Nobody seems to know the details.
I think the size of the number also makes people ask questions. If it was a 1% or 2% hike, it would just seem like normal business. You know, Apple's always going to want the lowest prices they can get on components. They're famous for, you know, doing everything they can to ensure low prices for long periods of time. And Samsung's going to want to charge as much as they can for theirs. And scarcity is a market factor. If Apple is asking for more chips than Samsung can comfortably produce, or if they have to increase factory capacity to make these chips, they can start charging more so that Apple adjusts their demand. I think Jason's right. There's not enough known yet to say whether it's an evil empire play or just a good business play.
Well, Apple and Samsung, back to their patent issues. Judge Lucy Koh, federal district judge, is going to look into whether the foreman in the Apple versus Samsung case, which ended up in Apple's favor, concealed information during his selection process into the jury, whether there was misconduct. The problem is that Samsung says, listen, this foreman, Velvin Hogan, did not disclose during jury selection that he had been sued by Seagate, who he used to work for. Samsung said in court papers, Seagate and Samsung have a substantial strategic relationship. So this is definitely something that should have been brought up. The litigation with Seagate led Hogan to file for personal bankruptcy in 1993. Hogan's defense is, no, they asked me until a certain amount of years passed. I think it was 15 years. Is there anything that we should know about? He said, this was before that. But then again, since Samsung and Seagate do have a relationship, and this is obviously something that did drastically affect Hogan's life, personal bankruptcy, should he have said something anyway? Anyone?
Lawyers will leave no stone unturned, right? And so you might as well try.
Yeah.
You might as well try, but it seems like they're grasping at straws.
I mean, it's weird, right? It's weird that, I mean, he obviously would have said, okay, well, I don't technically have to say anything, but why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you say something? That would have obviously come right to his mind, unless he's got memory problems. It does seem like something that would be strategically withheld.
They say it was in the past, and then they say, and it's also not about Samsung, right? It's about Seagate. And then there's this bizarre linkage of like, but we have a relationship with Seagate, and therefore there's transference of your rage towards Seagate. It's just, I mean, those are a lot of connections to make. It seems pretty ridiculous to me. I would probably not, unless, I mean, who knows? In court cases like that, maybe you volunteer up that, you know, who your bully was when you were in elementary school or something, and maybe you just clam up and say, well, you said only this period. I don't want to get in trouble. I'm only going to answer about this period. And it's not even Samsung anyway. I'd say it would be different if Samsung had caused him to be bankrupt. But it's like a company that works sometimes with Samsung. It's not the same. That's crazy.
Do we want to...
$1 billion can buy you a heck of a microscope. I'm sure if you look at any jury, you'll find all sorts of craziness that's going on. But because it's Samsung and Apple and $1 billion and people are covering it like it's the OJ trial, you're going to find tons of disparities. I mean, the decision still seems like a good one to me. I'm sure there'd be a bunch of strange ways which they achieved the decision. But at a certain point, they're going to have to move on so that the UK can have the spotlight for the Apple-Samsung craziness that they deserve right now.
So, yeah, I mean, speaking of that, what is, I mean, how can the story keep going and going, right?
It's England.
Because I don't know. It's when, again, it's amazing when people who earn a seven-figure or an eight-figure salary cannot just have a hot cup of coffee, have a cookie, let their blood sugar get back to normal levels, and then just realize that there's nothing to be gained by being idiots. So, I mean, if Apple could have, maybe the judge's original order didn't make a whole lot of sense, but it was a judge's order. It would have cost them almost nothing to simply say, okay, we can stamp a done stamp on this piece of paper just by putting this simple little notice on the board that we know is going to pass muster. But to flaunt it once, then to flaunt it twice, you don't do that to a judge. You don't do that to a fake TV judge. You don't do it to a judge who has actual power, because they're going to get rather upset with you, and they have a lot of things they can do to you. And it's just amazing to me that Apple just pushed it this far.
Yeah, the Court of Appeal of England and Wales, if you're wondering what is the deal, has ordered Apple to pay the legal fees of Samsung on an indemnity basis after Apple published what the court found to be false and misleading notice after the patent lawsuit over the iPad. The judgment will require Apple to pay the majority of the expenses associated with Samsung's legal defense, and any disputes over the exact amount. Yeah, you know, but Samsung could probably just say,
from parking tickets to Porsches.
Here's how much this is how much we want. Yeah, this is this is crazy. It's like, I don't know. It seems very childish. Yes, somebody needs a cookie.
Isn't this the corporate equivalent of getting pulled over and saying, "Hey, don't you know who I am?" This is
I pay your salary.
Yeah, we're bigger than you. We can curse you like a bug. We'll post your apology, but we'll post it in the corner, in the basement, behind a locked door with a sign that says "Beware of the Leopard." Sorry, Douglas Adams reference there. But that's Apple's disrespect in this case, and it's stupid. Don't do that. They'll put you in jail.
I can't help but think about the XKCD cartoon of the people at TSA, and the guy without the hat is arguing with the TSA's agent, and he's saying to his girlfriend, "Don't worry, honey. At any second now, this agent is going to understand the logic of my argument. He's going to let me have my bottled water back." No, he's not. He's just going to get more upset with you, and just to move you out of his way, he's going to send you to the little room for 2 hours. Or you could just simply say, maybe it's not quite right that I can't bring a bottle of water on the plane, but maybe I'll be able to get through my life faster and have far less pain today if I just let him have the bottle of water.
It
doesn't make you look good.
They just would have played nicely. They would not have had to post a second statement on the Apple website. I'll even read it. On the 25th of October, 2012, Apple Incorporated published a statement on its UK website in relation to Samsung's Galaxy tablet computers. The statement was inaccurate and did not comply with the order of the Court of Appeals of England and Wales. The correct statement is at apple.com/UK/legal-judgment.
Sorry, officer.
It went from embarrassing to humiliating very quickly.
Yeah, really. You just made it worse for yourself.
Yeah.
My goodness. Hey, before we get to some of our other news, let's kick it over to Leo again. He is going to tell you a little bit more about American Express.
Hey, Mac Break Weekly folks. Just want to take a minute of your time. I always said, you know, that we'll know Twit's made it when we've got a bank advertising. You know, that's a serious financial institution. But if they trust podcasting, podcasting's on the map. And you know what? We got a bank. I'm really happy about this. I've been an American Express customer since 1981. Maybe you have too. And maybe I didn't know about this, but maybe you did. The American Express Bank, FSB, did you know they have an online bank? I know we all want to save more for a rainy day or that gadget or my new Ford Fusion that I'm saving up for. Savings is so important. We don't do enough of it. I'll tell you what, if you would like to add this as a component of your financial plan, that may I suggest the American Express Bank? Here's why. It's a high-yield savings account, so you're going to get a competitive variable interest rate. It goes up when the interest rates go up. to help you reach your savings goals. It's easy to link to your existing account so you can have automatic withdrawals, which makes saving a whole lot better. Very easy to transfer more money or less, too, depending on your needs. They've got 24/7 web access to your money. Also, iPhone and Android phone access. No minimums, no fees. Great phone support whenever you feel like you want to talk to somebody. They're always glad to talk to you. This account is not to replace your existing banking. It's to add to complement your existing financial tools. If you'd like to find out more, find out what today's interest rate is, visit personalsavings.com/online savings. That's the American Express Bank, American Express Bank FSB, member FDIC. Got to get those initials right. I always wanted to say that. Member FDIC. personalsavings.com/online savings. We're so pleased to have American Express Bank as part of the Twitch family. We invite you to check it out. It's good. It's good for you too. Better than broccoli. It's always good to save. What's your reason to save? American Express Bank, FSB, member FDIC. Go to personalsavings.com/online savings. And now back to Mac Break Weekly.
Better than broccoli.
Wow.
Broccoli's really good for you, too.
He said, broccoli's so terrible. And he said better than. He didn't say as good as. He said better than.
Right. I mean, broccoli's got, what, I think a lot of vitamin C and calcium. Yeah.
Awesome. I think the idea is if you save, you can buy as much broccoli as you want. You know? You have money to buy broccoli.
It's better than being poor and having to buy that broccoli.
Right.
That's for sure.
Also, it's one of very few vegetables that if you collect, like, Star Wars Lego minifigs, if you want to, like, make them look like they're in the Forest of Endor, if you just stock up the broccoli stocks, all of your little stop-motion videos will look that much more accurate.
Yeah.
So it's quite an endorsement.
All right. Well, you heard it here. I like that idea. Hey, so should we talk about iPhone 5S rumors?
Ouch.
Who's excited? It only took, a month?
Just in time for
Christmas,
2013.
I've already set fire to my iPhone 5. It sickens me and repulses me.
Yeah. Apple just, they can't innovate anymore. This is obviously going to be a bad product. So
No. There's going to be a new iPhone 5S, and it's going to start shipping in December. Wait, no. Let's not get the rumor. Get ahead of us.
Remember every year there was a red iPhone coming in December rumor for about 3 or 4 years in a row, and just every year it would happen.
This is from DigiTimes. Renee, DigiTimes has a mixed track record as far as rumors go. And
DigiTimes is actually, I mean, they get incredibly good data from supply chains that they have absolutely no idea what to do with. I mean, they'll hear there's panels, but they won't know where, so it'll become an Apple panel, or they'll hear that Apple's working on this thing, but it won't know that, but they'll think it's for this device and not that. So if you go back in time 2 years, you'll find out DigiTimes knew a lot about different components for devices that would come out 2 years later, but they just totally misreported it at the time that they got the information.
So it's not so much we're making it up just to get page views. It's, well, I think this is the most logical conclusion that's not necessarily right. So what DigiTimes is saying is Apple's in early stages of production on the 5S or whatever it would be called, next gen iPhone. The next iPhone should enter trial production in December, says DigiTimes, and then ramp up volume production in the first quarter of 2013, which would indicate that the iPhone 5S would be available to consumers before a new iPad. Now, that might sound crazy because iPhones come out in the fall, right? That's just the way it goes. Then again, with the iPad mini, the whole schedule might be turned on its head when it comes to Apple.
I think the one that really gets me is that fourth generation iPad, because we had assumed that there would be an annual cycle and they did a quick turnaround and did a bump and it looks the same on the outside, but it's different on the inside. And that's the one thing that gives me pause about this rumor is, you know, maybe Apple's decided that it doesn't want to wait an entire year to do some internal refreshes, or maybe it's got a reason that it wants to upgrade or change some of the internals on the 5. And, you know, they could call it the 5S or it could be kind of a stealth update. Who knows? But, maybe it's true. It wouldn't be a huge update, right? It would be sort of like that fourth generation iPad. It would really be, something that would be smaller than that. But, you know, they did it. That's what gives me pause. Normally I would poo-poo something like this, but that that iPad update to the fourth gen iPad makes me wonder if maybe they are going to try to be a little more aggressive in swapping in some new stuff midstream instead of just waiting for that once a year cycle.
Well, that's part of the agility. I'm sorry, Rene, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, iPad 4 is the device that makes everyone think, oh, maybe Apple's going to stop waiting and they're going to start releasing. I mean, the rumors were that Apple had new iPads ready at the end of last year and the year before, and they just waited until the spring to release them. But the curious thing about the iPad 4 is internally it's iPad 3.4, 3.5. It's right. Apple doesn't consider it a new iPad, which makes it flabbergasting that they would actually call it the iPad 4, because the only thing that does is upset people with the iPad 3. And if Apple is making a 5S, I mean, is that an iPhone 6.1, or is that just like the Verizon iPhone where they fix a couple things and it works on a couple different networks and it's fine?
And maybe they still call it the iPhone 5 and it's totally a stealth update, which is sort of what we thought the new iPad would be, is, you know, it's still the old third generation iPad. It's just the one with the Lightning. And they, you know, LTE enabled now. Yeah, exactly. But they called it fourth generation. So now, who knows, is this, you know, but I do think, yeah, it makes me wonder that Apple maybe is going to be a little bolder with doing kind of midstream updates instead of just saying, let's just wait it all out and do only one update a year from now.
Yeah. Well, there are a couple of things here. Number one, this is one of the benefits that Apple gets from maintaining their manufacturing so tightly and so closely that there's never any point in which they could tell themselves, well, we would like to do an update this quarter, but we've got to clear out old inventory first. No, that's never a problem for Apple. Secondly, it's probably a good timing that this rumor is coming out just as Samsung is able to say, we had the hottest selling phone this quarter. We outsold the iPhone this quarter. And I was on the radio with someone who actually was saying, is this a sign that Apple is on its way down? And I had to say, no, it's a sign that everybody knows that September is when the new iPhone comes out and the summer is a terrible time to buy a new iPhone. And so early summer is a great time for Samsung to do their own flagship feature phone release. So I think that there's just like years ago when they decided that Apple's no longer going to do keynotes every January at Macworld Expo because it put an artificial deadline on them and put an artificial limitation on what they could do and when they could do it, because everybody was expecting a big announcement at the end of January. Now that they've sort of tricked themselves into a situation where everybody's expecting a new iPhone once a year, now that they stopped shipping them in June, now we're expecting them in September, maybe part of it is just to say, you know what, let's just let go of all of that. Let's ship things on our own schedule. Let's make sure that people don't really anticipate when things are going to be doing. We'll just do things exactly. Let's just do things on our own schedule. And then, but with the iPad 4, that was also a special case because they knew what volumes they're selling these iPads at. And I think that the sooner they feel as though they can shut down those lines producing 30-pin dock connectors, the better. And if they could find all kinds of other reasons to come up with a marginal update half a year in advance, all the better.
The other thing that's interesting is if you look at these stories, and I'm going to be more Mulder than Scully about this, companies are finding better ways to attack Apple, whether it's with branding or whether it's with investors or whether it's with consumers. Like that story Andy mentioned about Samsung outselling Apple, that was absolutely bogus. The headline said Samsung outsells Apple. The lead says Samsung outsells Apple. The actual quote says Samsung outships Apple, which is a completely different thing. And it just gets reported. Every headline that copied that press release says Samsung outsells Apple. And you have to start digging in. Well, which device? Which Samsung Galaxy? I mean, there's two different kinds. Which iPhone are they comparing? It was a completely, I don't know what the right word for it is, but it was not a news story. And it was quickly propagated as such. And now you have people nervous that if they buy an iPhone, maybe it'll be outdated as soon as next spring. And that puts pressure on Apple because we saw what happened when iPhone 5 rumors came up. iPhone 4S sales plummeted. So again, I don't want to be a conspiracy guy, but it is interesting to me that all these stories that hurt Apple on some form of either investor or consumer level keep coming out around this period of time.
You know, Renee, a few minutes ago you mentioned that the iPad 4th gen internally isn't even known as iPad 4. You know, it's 3 point something. Well, why did Apple call it the 4th gen? I mean, why didn't they just say... I mean, the iPad 3rd gen was introduced as the new iPad, and everyone went, oh, okay, now we're not doing numbers anymore. Why couldn't they have just said, yeah, you get a little bump if you don't have a new iPad yet. Now it's even better. And to stop all of the folks who got so angry that Apple was innovating faster than we were buying.
Yeah, it makes absolutely no sense to me. And it's what Jason said. I thought that this would be handled like the Verizon iPhone 4, where Apple, by the way, fixed the antenna, but the whole crux was that now it works on Verizon. And I thought Apple would just say, here's a new version of the new iPad that also works on LTE in Australia and Europe and these other places. You know, if you already have the iPad 3, this is essentially the same thing. By the way, we put the Lightning connector in, and it's not going to run quite as warmly as it did last time, but the main thing is that the LTE is more extended. But instead, they actually immediately said iPad. And even though the processor is twice as fast, in real life usage, there's almost no perceptive difference. And if you have an iPad 3 and you don't live in one of those countries with LTE that it doesn't support, there's no reason at all to switch to an iPad 4. So it was really flabbergasting to me that they actually put that label on it.
I wasn't surprised at all. I mean, given that they already have an iPad mini event going on there, so it's not as though they were going to roll out the whole dog and pony show just for this update to the iPad. But let's not forget that this is the quarter that Microsoft is shipping Windows 8, which is success or failure. We can have the debate like that as a sidecar. But we're still talking about a new, brand new line of devices running what is ostensibly still the most popular operating system on the planet that kind of blurs the line between the sort of devices that are distinctly an iPad and the sort of devices that are distinctly a Windows notebook. I mean, a Surface RT tablet, for a lot of people, covers a lot of the same ground. And if you're, for a lot of buyers, if you're looking for a laptop with tablet features, there it kind of obviates the need for specifically a 10-inch tablet. I think a 7-inch or 7.9-inch tablet is still very much in play. But a lot of people are going to wonder, well, I was going to be buying a new $799 Windows 8 PC. It does have a touchscreen. It does operate in some of the same ways that I would assume that I'd be using a 10-inch iPad for. Why am I going to be still interested in a 10-inch iPad? So I do see some logic in them deciding to say, not having a special event for it, not having a special commercial touting what a wonderful advance this is, but at least saying it costs them nothing to say this is the fourth generation iPad, rather than saying we just made a free tweak to people who haven't bought an iPad yet.
Speaking of iPhone 5Ss, we've got a couple people in chat saying, what are we even talking about? People are still waiting to get their iPhone 5s shipped to them.
That was part of the rumor. They were saying that Apple was going to work on an iPhone 5S because they were so difficult making the iPhone 5. They needed to change the way it was manufactured, and that would spin off into an S line.
Yeah, apparently, word from the Foxconn plant, iPhone 5 is the most difficult device that Foxconn has ever assembled, although apparently production is getting better day by day. CFO Peter Oppenheimer said, we're working very hard to get more into customers' hands as quickly as possible. CEO Tim Cook says, probably with a little twinkle in his eye, the demand for iPhone 5 is extremely robust. We are in a significant state of backlog.
I happen to know Jason Snell does a great Tim Cook, so we should have him read that.
Yeah.
This is Tim. I love that he identifies himself. He's the CEO. This is Tim. it's a significant backlog, and we feel terrible while we count all your money. it's funny. I would predict that this new iPhone 5, if it really does exist and is going to ship early next year, probably they'll just call it the iPhone 5, and they won't even stick an S on it. And it is probably more about changing the components and making it easier for them to build. And all of us will be like, aha, it's actually 5.4 or whatever. but that regular people will just be like, whatever, it's an iPhone 5. Is it black or white? And they're not going to care beyond that.
Yeah.
Can I buy it now?
The one thing from that report that kind of concerned me was, and this was just speculation on the writer's part, that Apple is partially concerned that they're waiting too long, and they're over testing, they're over certifying, and they want to speed up the certification process for their own hardware. And given that this is and antenna issues aside, Apple has a history of getting the hardware right at least the first time. That would concern anybody to think that they're speeding things up. But again, that was just conjecture on that person's part. I think it's more like, again, they've seen an opportunity. If they're doing if they're accelerating the development of the next iteration of the iPhone, I do think that it's these under the hood sort of improvements, kind of like what they're doing with the iPad 4, as opposed to we found a way to make it 1/3 of a millimeter thinner. You're welcome.
It's so interesting because the iPad 4 has all new internals, same case. The iPad mini has the new case, old iPad 2 internals. But it does raise the question, if Apple is off those cycles that Phil Schiller, you know, once mentioned, they like their product cycles and they're just going to release new stuff whenever it's ready. I mean, whenever the chips are there, new LTE chips or new Apple A asterisk chips, they'll just be a new product.
Well, apparently the iPhone 5, at least folks who have ordered them and were expecting 3 to 4 week delays now can enjoy 2 to 3 week delays. So things are moving in the right direction. Speaking of delays, I don't know, Renee, I know that you're also getting the LTE iPad mini.
Yeah.
Although you already have your Wi-Fi version. Jason, do you have a mini yet? Or are you? Yep. Okay. So you've got one. I had ordered the LTE iPad mini, and I was expecting to get it sometime in November. It was very vague. I now have at least, well, it's not a tracking number. It's an order number from Apple that if I click on it says I'm expected to receive it November 21st. Although I also got an email that was sent 5 days ago, November 8th. Yes. That was weird. This is a weird email. The subject is Apple Store, important information about your order. And it's my order number. The order number is right. Good news. We plan to ship your iPad in the next 5 business days. We'll email you with a tracking number and carrier information once your iPad is on the way. Additionally, you can now view your delivery date and order details by visiting apple.com/order status, the Apple Store. And it's sent from a weird, it's like, do not reply, conn@apple.com. So I saw this and went, phishing scheme. I'm not clicking on anything. But then I started seeing reports in the blogs that people were getting these. And so everybody was getting their iPads early. Did anybody else get this notice?
Yeah, I got something like that. There's also a nice pro tip. If you go to, I think it's supportprofile.apple.com and you log in, I was able to see the serial number of my iPad mini before it had actually even shipped, because they had put it in their system and it was linked to my Apple ID because I ordered it on the Apple online store. So they've got lots of weird stuff going on in terms of trying to communicate what they're doing and when they're doing it and putting you in the database. And it's a very strange, I don't know what all the moving pieces are that they're doing there, but I got some interesting communications too. And then I found out, I knew my iPad serial number before it even came to me. Weird.
Is it shipping earlier? I mean, according to what you're tracking now, earlier than November 21st or 23rd, as some people were being quoted?
Not mine. I mean, mine still says available to ship late November. I haven't even got a date yet. So obviously it's harder north of the border.
Very strange. I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at this email. It's like, it still just seems fishy, doesn't it? I mean,
it's Schrodinger's iPad mini. It's neither alive nor dead.
Right. It's just weird. Well, I hope I get mine this week, because if it comes next week, we're all going to be gone for the Thanksgiving break, and then I'm going to have to wait another few days. And just give me the mini. I want it. I want to be able to be underwhelmed by the display.
Ha! Cupertino's across the street. Walk it over now.
Yeah. It's you know, the display, I got to say, I was prepared to be underwhelmed, and it's not great, but boy, it's so thin and light that I've been using it since I got it last week, and I have not gone back to my full-sized Retina iPad, which I figured I would run screaming from in a few days, and I haven't gone back yet.
I think the same as Jason.
Well, I'm the lone nut theory here. I think it's I'm not seeing a great difference in how I use this sub 8-inch tablet versus my Kindle Fire HD. I still have my 10-inch iPad Revision 3. Still love it. Still use it every day. It's still something I use it for actual work. But I think that's the difference between me and what I would guess is the majority of the people who are in the market for touchscreen tablets. I don't think a lot of people really need a 10-inch screen, who really need to use it as a laptop substitute. I think they're actually using it for the sort of chores that are really ideally suited to a smaller screen, like reading books, keeping up with email, Facebook posting, that sort of thing. But the thing is that I think that there are unique advantages to the iPad mini, but there are also unique advantages to the Nexus 7 and the unique advantages to the Kindle Fire HD. And over the past 2 or 3 weeks, the toughest questions I've had to answer are from people who are asking me, hey, I want to buy one of these tablets for my aunt or my sister or my cousin or my daughter or whatever. Which one should I get? And it really has to be a long conversation about what this person expects to do with this thing. And then only then can you match them up with the right device.
Yeah, I have a Nexus 7, and I'm just disappointed by the apps. I think that I think the OS is okay, and I like the hardware. But the when I try to get good apps, I've been generally disappointed. Even, and it's kind of funny, even Amazon, the Kindle Fire Amazon book reader app is great, and the iOS Amazon app is pretty good, and the stock Android Amazon app, Kindle app, is not. It's not as good as either of the others. So, you know, I kept finding like the MLB app isn't as good. I don't think the Netflix app looked as good and behaved as well. And I kept coming up with, that for me, that was the problem, not the size of it, but that the apps weren't as good as and the iPad mini has this advantage of just running all the iPad apps unmodified. Yeah. And there are a lot of them and they're good.
But at the same time, the shrunk down user interface doesn't weird me out as much as I thought it would a couple of months ago. But I still have to say it's suboptimal. It is, the targets are tiny. There are a lot of apps that just there are a lot of multi-touch gestures on individual apps that just were not designed for targets that are 80% smaller than what the developer had in mind initially. And at the end of the day, you're still getting a product that is $130 more expensive than something else. And if you're talking to somebody who really doesn't expect to spend several hours a day with this device, they really just want to read books, they really just want to access Hulu, they just want to access Comixology, it's not necessarily going to be a deal breaker for them.
For me, I had a very similar reaction to Jason, where I got a Nexus 7 and I stopped using it because for me it was like the apps weren't as good. It was like a big iPod Touch rather than a small tablet, and the back button was almost like a random app changer thingy, and it ended up frustrating me, and the amount of services aren't that available. And the Kindle Fire HD looks good, but it's not available in Canada. It's available in the handful of countries that Amazon can subsidize the price with content for, which means I won't be getting it for a long time. With the iPad mini, I mean, Andy's right about the touch targets, but if developers followed the guidelines, it's got the same touch ratio as an iPhone 3GS. So if they had the 44 points set up, a lot of them didn't do that. Even Apple's apps like Calendar didn't do that properly. And some developers, like the New York Times has already updated to better fit the iPad mini display. And I did a bunch of nerdy, geeky diagrams just to show that, and I'll stick that in the chat room. But it, for me, it's been absolutely fine, and I have not gone back to my big iPad either.
Yeah, I just can't. I think it's the difference between how people use these things. Again, I tend to use my iPad as a hybrid device, so it's fine for me. The mini iPad is fine for, I'm going to dip into this experience for a little bit. Because the 10-inch iPad is not something that I can really be carrying around with me right now. But there's a point at which it's like, nope, I really just can't use this. I have to move on to the real iPad.
All right. Are we ready? Anybody want to add a little anything? iPad mini, no Retina. Jason?
No, Andy's right. It is how you use it. I've been surprised that I thought I would be more productivity-oriented and go back to the big display. And it hasn't happened, which, I mean, it's genuinely a surprise. But we'll see how it goes. I may turn that iPad on tomorrow and go, oh, my God, and like toss the mini away. I don't know. But, you know, we live in a world with all these different options. I've got a Kindle Paperwhite, too. And I find myself asking myself, you know, what's the difference between using the Kindle Paperwhite and using the iPad mini? And would I just get rid of the Paperwhite and stick with the mini? There are some issues there about glare because the e-ink screen, the lighting on it is a little bit nicer in lots of circumstances, but not all. Yeah. But it's fascinating that we have all of these choices now. And sometimes it's going to come down to literally like how it feels in your hand instead of anything else. It's like, is it comfortable to hold in my hand for half an hour versus something like, you know, specs that we think of today? It may be not about specs and all about ergonomics.
Yeah.
I'd
just like to say one last thing that Jason's absolutely right. I'd love to see the Apple community and the broader community of technology likers get beyond is the idea that there has to be a victor and a loser in every product launch. That the only way to have a successful product is to make sure that it sells enough that, you know, just like that line in Bull Durham, you win by getting your victory is that you get to come back to the ballpark So if a device sells well enough that they get to do another iteration of it, and the user base continues to evolve, the installed apps continue to get better, that's a win. What we really are hoping for is that not that Apple controls the entire tablet industry, and it's silly to say that iPad makes the best devices in any category. It's that no matter what sort of device, no matter what sort of solution you're looking for, this consumer will be able to find the one that's perfect. They're not getting an iPad because it's the only one that's out there. They're getting an iPad because they looked at four different models with four different attitudes and approaches towards how to make a multi-touch device, and they decided that the iPad was the best fit. So that's what's great about the developments of 2012. So much choices in tablets. We went from a situation where really the iPad was the only thing going to a situation in which I can name five superlative multi-touch tablets that I would be happy to recommend to just about anybody.
And also, it's better competition for Apple. If they dominate the market, you know, Apple's good at competing with themselves, but they're always best when there's strong competition. And I've just found for me that if I leave the house without a laptop, I'm going to take my big iPad because there's just more things I can do with it. But if I already have a MacBook Air with me, I find I don't need the big iPad. So the iPad mini keeps the weight down. It's much easier to take with me, and that's what I'm going to go with.
Mm. All right. Before we get into some of our... we have a miscellaneous section of stories that we can dip into. Let's kick it over to Leo again. He's going to talk about one of our favorite blogging engines, Squarespace.
Hey, Mac Breakers. Leo Laporte back from Australia to mention Squarespace. I was so proud of Squarespace. Did you read the story in, I think it was the Huffington Post, about what happened with Squarespace? I was watching the pictures in the blog on Squarespace during Hurricane Sandy. After Sandy knocked out the power to Lower Manhattan, that's where the Squarespace Network Operations Center is, Pier 1 hosting. And the story is amazing. These guys kept, through the power outage, kept Pier 1 up, kept Squarespace sites up, literally by a bucket brigade. Employees from Squarespace joined employees from Pier 1 and other and Fog Creek Software to keep. Con Ed cut the power off at 75 Broad Street. The company had generators in the basement, but the basement was flooded. This is such an amazing story. Their last backup generator was on the 17th floor. So Pier 1 called Squarespace, said, look, we're going to run out of power. Anthony Castellana, the founder of Squarespace, ran over with other employees and began a bucket brigade of diesel-filled jugs, hauling them upstairs. This is the dedication to uptime that makes Squarespace so remarkable. What a story. I am so proud to be part of, affiliated with Squarespace. And I love Anthony. We went out, we had dinner with him last year. We had such fun talking to him. This is a guy you would like. This is a company you would love. He started it in college. Here was the idea. He wanted to make a great website. He didn't like the tools that were available, so he wrote his own. And then he started a business where he does hosting. This is a host, but also there's only one thing you can do on this host, and that's run the Squarespace software. Really good software, too, let me tell you. Just take a tour. Go to squarespace.com. Actually, even better than tour, click the Get Started button. You can try it free for 14 days, absolutely free. No credit card needed or anything. So you really can get a sense of it. Use the Squarespace importer to import in the content from your existing site so you can really see what it looks like. You'll love the mobile responsive designs. And if you are, and I know some of you are, an artist of some kind. Many of you are photographers or painters. Maybe you're a writer or a filmmaker, a fashion designer. Squarespace is the place to make a portfolio. The responsive design means it's very easy to make a gallery that looks great no matter what the platform is. It's so good for people nowadays. People come on mobile. You need to look good on mobile. Squarespace is, the new Squarespace is completely designed from the ground up to do this. Plus, you have full control of what your site looks like, even if you're not a web wizard. You could be a normal person. Now, if you do know CSS, JavaScript, HTML5, the sky's the limit at Squarespace. You'll love the code editor with the colors, syntax coding, and all of that. That's the point. Squarespace, kind of makes it easy for everybody. I want you to try it free. Go to squarespace.com. Set up your site. Look at it on an iPhone, on an iPad, on an Android phone, on a desktop. You'll see how great it looks in all sizes. If you decide to buy, check it out. The pricing on Squarespace is amazing. They've got only two plans. They really simplified this. The standard plan, $8 a month, or the unlimited plan, $16 a month. $16 a month, you can have unlimited pages, galleries, blogs, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. If you buy the annual plan, you'll save more. I'm going to give you the coupon code in a bit. And you'll also be getting a free domain name from .com, .org, .net, .biz, or .info. It's yours to keep. And they'll hook it up to your Squarespace site. So this really makes it very easy. You want to try it? MailChimp, Sync, Google Apps, Advanced Form Builder, all of this. Squarespace.com. If you decide to buy, do me a favor. Use MacBreak11 as the offer code, and you'll save 10% off your first purchase. That's why you want to get the year to save the most. Squarespace.com. Make sure you use the offer code MacBreak11. It really is an exceptional, exceptional business. So proud of them. And by the way, everything's up and running, and Sandy's moved on, thank goodness, and our friends are all okay, I think. Back to Mac Break Weekly.
Thank you, Leo. So patently, Apple had a kind of neat story about an invention, an Apple headphone invention, which is way cooler than the EarPods, actually. this is a headphone design that could be operated in two modes. So you've got the first mode, which is just normal, I'm wearing headphones. And then the second mode would allow me to put my headphones, take them off my head, put them on a table, and then they become speakers with, I guess, some sort of an amplifier that hopefully is really smart enough not to make me go deaf if I'm wearing them on my ears, so that I've got a little walking stereo system with me. I mean, we're always carrying headphones around with us. Although these aren't the in-ear buds that don't take up a lot of space, right? These are actually over-the-ear headphones rather than in-ear headphones. I don't know. I sometimes wonder, I mean, who are all these people who need speakers all the time? Is this cool to you guys? Would you use it?
This is the sort of product description that, like, mentally you hear at the end of this pitch. So sharks, I'm asking for $80,000 for investment in exchange for 5% of the company. I regret your offers.
I would have said it's Dell commercial, but that's close enough.
Yeah, I mean, it seems on the surface like an interesting idea. And you would have discussions with people about it that would go of the 40 levels that you have to go to get a product made. It would get to level 3 before someone would realize that, yeah, but it's kind of a quirky, weird, you know, gadgety sort of product. You could find a manufacturer in China to make it. You could probably get it in CVS pharmacies and people would buy them for the holidays, but people would never use them after the second time that they turned them on.
The built-in safety feature, which is addressing my actual concern, says to prevent injury to a user by outputting amplified audio while the headphones are near a user's ears. The headphones could include a sensor for detecting the distance between ears and headphones. So sensor that detects contact between the headphones and the user could be provided. Well, that's a relief.
Yeah. Also, doesn't like every guy on the subway on every time I've ridden the T already have a patent on earphones that also act as loudspeakers. At least I see three of these guys on every single subway car I go to, where it's not enough that they're wearing, you know, the earbuds that fill the entire compartment with. So maybe someone was riding the metro and decided that, hey, that's a good idea for an actual product.
I had one of those guys next to me on an airplane once. It was hilarious because I felt like I could hear every single thing he was listening to. And I thought, either those are really bad headphones or he's deaf or both.
So there's really almost no point in nudging him, asking him to turn it down because he wouldn't hear you anyway.
Yeah, I know it's old news, but when the EarPods, I'm getting that name right? Yeah, the newest form of the Apple's in-ear headphones, when they were first released, I was so excited because they were going to be the answer to all my prayers. I thought they sounded so much better. But now that I actually use them, and I use them daily, you know, when I go running and things like that, you know, they're really not that great. And I'm sure it depends on how well your ears are designed and if they're misshapen or something, but they fall out of my ears all the time. I don't know. I don't know if the in-ear headphones thing is... I don't think the AirPods are as great as I thought at the beginning.
They're not designed for everybody, right? They're designed for anybody. They're designed because they need to put something in the box, and they're better than what was in the box before, but... You know, anybody who's kind of even a little bit of a headphone snob who tries to use those as all purpose. I mean, they're fine. They're good enough for probably 90% of the people who use them, 95% maybe. But they're not, you know, people who are trying to run with them. It's not, you know, people who've got ears that are just not quite the right size or shape. You know, I've got in-ear headphones here. I haven't used a pair of Apple headphones in a long time.
Yeah. Well, they're still, I think, the best sub $50 headphones I've tried. And when you consider that you also get like inline microphone and volume controls, I still think they're it's a great thing to throw into the box with the phone. Given that this office here gets at least a few phones every single month, and I see the crappy earbuds that you get with them, then I do think it's a big win.
Well, maybe you'll like this patent better. This is Apple patent number 8,303,151 for micro perforation illumination. Apparently would create a micro perforation in a device that's small enough so that the naked eye could not see it, but large enough to allow the passage of light so that it could be used with multi-touch technology to create invisible device controls. What?
I mean, initially what I saw was a manufacturing simplicity where that's one less, if they could micro perforate the lid of the MacBook so that they don't have to put that extra like translucent plastic inside, that's a one step less, that's one less part to put in. I don't understand if Apple is actually asking us to stroke the Apple logo fondly to make something happen. That's a level of Apple integrity of Apple fandom that I'm not sure that I'm willing to get behind.
I was like Andy. I thought exactly that it was going to be a better thing than the plastic. Maybe that patent is being misrepresented in the write up.
Jason, any idea?
They've been doing those little micro perforations for a while now in some places, and I think. I've always thought that it was more about them not liking the look of cutouts and things and trying to get it down to the, you know, these small little punctures. And, you know, it would be cool, I guess, if they could create, they have more freedom to have, you know, touchscreen on the bezel, even though it's not a screen or something like that. But up to now, what they've been using micro perforations for is just to make it so that they don't have to big round hole. They can do a bunch of little tiny holes, and yeah, it's, you can see them. They're not as small as I guess the ones in this patent, but they're less. It's more of a design decision. It's using engineering to make something that looks pretty.
That's interesting. Do you think that they would be so interested? And I'm not even suggesting this is true or not, but I think that's an interesting question. Like if you put it, if they had a technology so that the Apple logo would only appear on the cover of a MacBook when it's actually illuminated, when it's actually running, would there be a camp inside of Apple that would say, no, it'd be great because that one, now we have just a sheet of unblemished, perfect sheet of substance that just highlights what this thing is made out of, and then the Apple logo seems to come in out of nowhere when it's activated? Or would they just want to make sure they have a logo on there somewhere even when this thing is completely inert?
Well, and keep in mind it's a patent, so it's possible that they had that argument and the people said, nah, we're not going to do it, but let's patent it.
Tony, I have one.
Right. Right, but I could see that for something that's revealed, maybe not the logo, but something where you look at it and it looks like there's nothing there, and suddenly there's something that indicates status, or it's just, you know, maybe on the front a little logo lights up or something. I don't know.
That sleep light that used to throb,
right?
Cylon light at us.
Well, what about the current state of iOS? Business Insider article. The headline is, it's time for Apple to unleash a major software overhaul. That could mean iOS.
It's always
could
time
mean,
for that.
Yeah, could mean all sorts of things.
iTunes.
This is sort of a gathering of quotes from a variety of journalists who write about Apple and iPhones and iPads, citing the iPhone 5. You know, it's boring and people are bored.
Who's bored? I mean, we've had the same desktop metaphor on the Mac for since there was a GUI. I mean, there's been very little radical change on desktop operating systems, probably until Windows 8. And if you look at something, people are very impressed. Windows Phone is all different. It's new. But Metro is even more constrained than iOS is. You can make a Metro app. I think it was your pick of the week last week, Sarah. You can make an iOS app that looks exactly like a Windows Phone music player. And you can't do that on Windows Phone because Metro is the forced design language. So I don't buy the idea that it's... Well, I haven't seen them.
Oh, I'm
I mean,
sorry.
Everything is Metro, right? Like you have the panorama view for apps. Everything is large. It's big. You're in your inbox. The design language permeates Windows Phone, where iOS, you have a developer can make an app look like almost anything that they want once they launch container.
You can. My understanding from my conversations with Windows Phone developers is that you can, if you want to, throw out Metro entirely and have a canvas that you just basically put all your objects on, just as you can with iPad. But there's such a. I do think that Metro is a wonderful design language that scales magnificently from handset to tablet to desktop very, very well. And this, as a matter of fact, it's one of the things I really like about Surface RT, that they found a way to merge an interface that's appropriate for both keyboard and mouse and one that's suitable for touchscreen in a very, very good way. But you're right in that we've seen very, very few apps that decide, no, you know what, we're going to get rid of what is actually supposed to be called the modern interface. We're going to get rid of modern completely, and I'm just going to have my app do whatever it wants to. The only places that I'm really seeing that are in apps that are just sort of transmogrifications of an iOS or an Android app. Meanwhile, when you look at the Netflix or a game, right? Meanwhile, you take a look at the Comixology app, you take a look at the Netflix app. Those are, in my opinion, they're the best articulations of those apps on any mobile platform you can find. And it is because of the Metro design language, because it allows the people to, it allows designers, it gives them a nicer palette of tools to go from when you're presenting media in a mobile context.
I would say I do agree with the larger point that I think we're coming up 6 years since we first saw what we now call iOS, and it's a model built on that one. You know, the original iPhone had one screen, it wasn't even entirely full of apps, and right. We've come a long way since then. But a lot of the concepts, the fundamental concepts of the Springboard, especially, haven't changed very much in coming up 6 years. And I do feel like it's time for a refresh and time for a rethink. And yeah, Apple's been very successful with it, but you know, if you never change while you're successful, you're just going to ride something into the ground until it's a failure. And Apple doesn't want to do that. It makes me wonder with the executive changes, with Forstall leaving, you know, with Ive and Federighi being upgraded, that maybe this is. I'm not saying, you know, what their motivations might be and what would have happened if Forstall had stayed, but it just having new people in charge makes me think like it's a time of transition, and maybe we'll actually see with iOS 7 maybe some real change in what the iPhone and iPad look like for the first time. And I think it would be welcome. I think it's time.
What's crazy, if you think about it, is that iOS is now one of the oldest mobile operating systems. It was so new in 2007, but now everyone else has refreshed. And when BlackBerry 10 launches in December, and BlackBerry 10 looks to be a fantastic interface, very gesture-centric as well, iOS will be the oldest popular mobile OS still on the market. And you know, they are dragging now. They are almost in the Windows position where they are dragging hundreds of millions of mainstream users behind them. And I've said before, my sister uses her iPhone to take pictures, make phone calls, and listen to iPod music. She doesn't know anything about Notification Center, nothing about fast app switchers, nothing about Siri. She just likes to hit her buttons, press the home button, go back to those three apps. But Apple has been making a lot of changes. A lot of them are under NDA still, or they're not surfaced in iOS 6. But there's a lot of stuff that is setting Apple up for things like Siri, which is an entirely new interface that just happens to coexist with iOS right now, or with Notification Center, where there are the beginnings of widgets, the beginnings of data being brought into apps, and not you having to go hunt for apps. So I think iOS 7 might be too early, but there's definitely things that Apple is doing that I think is going to surprise and delight us going forward.
Yeah. I think Apple's in kind of a dangerous time right now in that it's not that when the iPad and the iPhone first came out, all these companies were, I wouldn't say, oh, copying is kind of an incendiary term, but let's just say copying both of those devices, which means that they were just producing what Apple was capable of producing in 2007. What we're seeing, I think, for the first time in 2017 is Google and Microsoft taking the lessons of 3 years of experience, not just with iPads and iPhones, but with iPad and iPhone users. Here's how they're responding to it. Is there something they can learn from the fact that you can buy really clunky, really ugly looking keyboard cases for the iPad, and it's a very competitive, very successful market? And the result are operating systems like Windows 8, interfaces like Metro, the new Google's version of Siri, which in many ways is, in most ways, is as good, in many ways even better. Apple really is going to be challenged to make sure that they continue to push the medium forward. Most of the cases, it's not so much a case of catching up to these other people so much as making sure that they don't fall behind in the future. But in the Springboard app, this, I think, is a critical issue. They need to fix it. Right now, the way that the app, that the iPad and the iPhone launch apps, it's a problem. It is the most difficult system on all the mobile operating systems that I work with, and it's the least flexible. And the reason why that I often do find myself recommending a Kindle Fire HD over an iPad mini to some people is that there are folks that they don't want to interact with this as a computer. They want to see the damn book that they were reading yesterday. They want to see the damn movie they're listening to, watching this morning. They don't want to have to think about, okay, what app did I use to buy and run the, what app did I use to run this thing? And now where do I find it on these 10 pages of unassociated, undifferentiated icons that are not sorted by name, not sorted by category, not sorted by anything except for this really meticulous process that I, the user, have to undergo to impose some order upon this. Springboard is potentially an anchor that's going to drag people down, because this is their first interaction with the iPad. You wake up, this is the first thing you use when you take this thing out of the box after you've registered it. And man, it's just such a terrible first impression.
Springboard has changed. I don't want to spoil it. We'll have a post up on it later today, but there's been some big changes to this. I don't want to speak out of turn, but there have been some big changes to Springboard, and I think there will continue to be. And I think, again, we'll be seeing some interesting stuff from Apple.
Still a grid of icons, still understanding that your relationship to your data through applications, which is a very 2004 attitude towards the way an operating system works. I just think we need something radically better.
I have mixed feelings about that. I do think that we are an effort dragging hundreds of millions of people who are very comfortable, very used to press the home button, press my icon, press the home button, press my icon. And I think the trick is moving them forward while not losing them, but giving us a more sophisticated way of doing it. And I think part of what Apple's introducing in the newer versions of iOS will hopefully take care of that.
You know, I have an app issue, because I test so many apps that I have way more than the average person should ever have. But I find that instead of even organizing my apps, I've just completely given that up. I just I search for everything. Yep. And that works okay for me. But Andy, I think to your point is, I still have to remember what app helped me do the thing, make the thing work. And sometimes I'm sitting there in my with a search bar empty going, I don't even know what I'm searching for. I know what I want to achieve, but now I have to remember the name of the app that I might have only downloaded a week ago. And it's not etched into my brain. So that is sort of a problem.
Yeah, I too use Spotlight as my application launcher. I almost never launch from Springboard anymore. It's just not useful for me.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we've got picks of the week. I think that'll cheer us all up a little bit. before we get to those, we're going to kick it over to Leo one last time to thank our fourth and final sponsor, Gazelle.
If you don't mind, I'd like to interrupt just for a moment. Hello, everybody. Leo Laporte coming back from the grave, well, at least from Australia, to talk a little bit about Gazelle. Show of hands, how many of you have a messy drawer in the house that's filled with old computers and cell phones and old gadgets? Some of us have messy closets. Some of us have entire rooms devoted to old gadgets. There's no reason to save those gadgets. They're not getting more valuable, Dick. Dick actually pays hundreds of bucks a month for the gadget warehouse. They're not getting more valuable. What you need is Gazelle. Gazelle. Gazelle.com. sell your iPhone, your iPad, your Mac, your iPod, your old cell phone, and get cash for it right now. They'll even buy old Blackberries. How much could those be? Let's see. AT&T BlackBerry Torch. It's in good condition. I don't actually have one of these, but what if you did? You know, you'd be tempted just to throw it away or throw it in a drawer. Free of water damage. How much? Worth $92. Now throw that in the box. How about your iPad? You want to get that new iPad fourth generation? Take the old third generation iPad. Trade that in. What? $525. Now, here's the deal. That quote is good for a month, so you have time to get the new iPad, decide if you want to keep it, transfer your data over, and then 30 days later, send your iPad to Gazelle, and they guarantee that price. Their data experts will wipe it. This is better than recycling. This is getting it to somebody who really wants it. For Apple computers, Apple TV, Apple displays, iPods of any generation almost, iPads, of course, cell phones, and iPhones too. Gazelle.com. Cash, PayPal, or get an Amazon gift card and get an extra 5%. They've sent out now almost $50 million to over 400,000 very happy customers. Don't let it gather dust when you could be getting money, cash in your pocket. Go to Gazelle and get your 30-day quote today. Gazelle.com. We now take it back to Mac Break Weekly.
Thank you. Thank you, Leo. It's picks time. This is actually my favorite part of the show because I get a lot of tips from all of you. Andy, should we start with you this week? What's your tip?
Sure. My tip, as we turn the screen back on, there you go, is the sort of app that I really love to see. It's a car. It's an app that's designed specifically for use on your iPhone while you're in your car, while it's in a car dock, to be sure. What it does is it takes all the most common features that you would like to access on the iPhone while you are driving and gives you a way you can access those safely. And so this is like the normal, what you see behind me is the normal like sort of screen that you're looking at. And all you see are four really, really huge buttons. And you reach over and tap one really huge button. You have access to your music player once again with a really, really large display. We can move from track to track just by swiping. So you really don't even have to look at the iPhone to do that. How many times where have you been stuck in traffic? You're on the highway. You're supposed to be doing 65. You're actually doing like closer to 35, and you know you're going to be really, really late. And it's so tempting to simply reach out and try to send a text message to the person you're meeting with saying, "Hi, I'm sorry, I'm in traffic. I'm going to be a little bit late." But you really, really can't do that. Even with Siri, it's kind of dangerous. Instead, there's a button that says Quick Text, where you just preload it with the person that you would like to send a text message to, and you preload it with a typical generic message such as "Hi, traffic, running late. I'll update you whenever I can." And so you really just reach out, tap one button, tap another big button. Again, practically without even looking, it'll get like maybe one third of a second of your attention, and you can do these things safely. And it has a whole bunch of just those kind of simple little features. It's 99 cents, I think, and I really would like to see more apps that are like this, that are sort of optimized for allowing people to do things that are logical to use a device for inside a car, but facilitates using them safely. Because, I mean, I tried early on to try to use Siri for text messaging when, again, you have to send that, "Hey, I'm looks like I'm going to miss my 120 train. I'm going to take the 210 instead, and I'll see you later." Unfortunately, you have to make sure that Siri's, you know, you hold down the button. You're not even looking, so that's fine. You say, "Hi, message Dave, sending a message to Darvon Stationery." "No, Dave." "Okay, what would you like to say to Dave?" "Hi, Dave. Boop, boop. Here is your message." "No, that's not the message. You didn't wait for me to tell you what to say." And so now I've got road rage, but I wish that Siri were in a car that I could crash into out of spite instead of just on my dashboard. So it's a great app, 99 cents. It's definitely at the level where you can buy it, you can install it. If it doesn't work out, then it was a good experiment for 99 cents. But it's likely that it'll let you do things safely that otherwise you wouldn't have access to.
Yeah, it looks like I think in the notes it says it's a introductory offer. So maybe it's 99 cents temporarily, 50% off of $1.99 or something like that. So
I really wish the store I really wish the store would force these people to say it's an introductory offer and here is exactly the date at which we will stop introducing this. Because all these introductory offers, they seem to last, I don't know, like roughly and through the end of the Obama administration.
Yeah, just until then, you
then
start
we'll
telling
think,
everybody.
Think about extending it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a dollar. And then they go, no, it's not. It's $2. You say, well, that was 4 years ago. That's a good one. That's Drive. 99 cents. Thank you, Andy. Renee, your yes. pick, sir.
A while ago, there was an app introduced called Clear for the iPhone. It was designed by Phil Ryu, who's amazing, and it was coded by Real Mac. And I didn't end up using it because I can't really use a to-do or a task sort of list that's only locked on my iPhone. But last week, they actually introduced Clear for Mac, and it uses iCloud Sync. So now you can use Clear on your iPhone, you can use the iPhone app on your iPad, and you can use the new Mac Store app on your Mac. And the challenge for this was Clear did a very almost Metro-esque, a very gesture-oriented interface. And I was wondering how they would translate that to the Mac because most of us don't have touchscreen Macs. And they did a really good job. It's full of keyboard shortcuts. It's designed so you can enter new tasks extremely fast. The sync between the two versions is split second. And I've been using it quite a bit over the last week. It's more like Reminders app. It's not a full omni-focus sort of a getting things done app, but for just quick lists and sorting through them and marking them as done, it's a very nice alternative to the built-in.
I guess it all comes down to, can you use it? You know, does it make you feel like you're more organized, you're getting stuff done more easily? Whatever that is, that's the good app. All right, Jason, do you have a tip for us?
I do. I have a pick. It's called Control Plane. You can get it at controlplaneapp.com. They call it context-sensitive computing. It's a free app. And basically, it looks at your Mac's environment and figures out where you are. And then you can set it to do various things, like set a default printer or update your iChat or message status and a bunch of other stuff. And the reason I got it was I wanted to have my chat status say when I'm at the office and say when I'm at home, and I didn't want to do it myself, but I didn't want it to be wrong. And Control Plane, you can actually go into great detail and say, if you see these Wi-Fi networks, or if you're attached to this kind of device, this probably means you're in this location, and you can actually stack things up. So if it sees that I'm attached to an external monitor and I'm looking at my work Wi-Fi, 100% confidence I'm at work, and it sets it. So it's just a really clever way for your Mac, if you've got a laptop, to know where it is and then to do things based on that context. Which is something the system doesn't let you do. It's not built into the system. So this app is the bridge. It'll look at your Wi-Fi and your devices and your network configuration and all of that stuff. And then you can fire off Apple scripts. You can have it, you know, control your Mac in different ways. And I like it. I think it's cool if you've got a laptop that it can just intuit where you are when you open it up and do some work for you.
And it's free?
Free.
Wow.
Low, low price of free.
Yeah. That's a great price.
Yeah.
I love free.
My favorite.
Awesome. That's Control Plane. At controlplaneapp.com.
That's it.
Love it. Sorry, you guys had picks. I kept calling them tips. You had three really good picks. Not tips. Well, I guess they're sort of tips.
Our tip is to download and install the software. Exactly.
Yeah. That's it.
Install it. All right. Well, I think we've come to the end of a very good Mac Break Weekly. Thanks so much to all of you gentlemen for sticking with me 2 weeks in a row. Hey, Andy, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that you are the pilot on next week's Mac Break Weekly.
Exactly. We've got a special musical episode. I've got Sammy Davis Jr., Robert Goulet, and the Quinn Martin Singers. So be sure to be rolling tape on that one.
Yes. How could you not? Of course, Andy Anatko, senior lead writer at the Chicago Sun-Times, technology columns, friend of Twit. I don't know. You're just great. Renee Ritchie.
Blood donor. Regular blood donor.
Blood donor. Proud blood donor. And user of safe apps while driving. Renee Ritchie, editor over at iMore. You mentioned that you've got a pretty interesting post coming out later today, although you don't want to spoil anything. Anything else interesting happening over at iMore these days?
Yeah, well, actually, it's not so much a post. It's a brand new, it's an interview that we did with Lauren Brichter. It was myself and Guy English.
Oh,
we did
nice.
a long interview with Lauren Brichter about how he built and the challenges he had and the future of iOS, everything about letterpress and Twitter sorry, Tweety. So there's a lot of really good gems contained in there.
Oh, it's great. Well, we'll look out for that. And that's going up later today?
Later today.
Awesome. Jason Snell, editorial director for Macworld, TechHive, and PC World. You sound very busy.
There's a lot going on. That's a lot of websites.
Anything of note happening that we should know about in your world this week?
Come visit our websites and check out my podcast, The Incomparable, which is all about sort of sci-fi and geeky stuff. And you can search for it on iTunes and you'll find it. It's the only one called The Incomparable because it's incomparable.
Awesome. Well, thanks to all of you for joining me. And thanks to everybody for watching or listening. I got this wrong last week, so I'm going to try to get it right this week. And now, break time's over. Get back to work. Did I get it right?
Nice.
See,
nailed it.
Perfect. Nailed it.
You stuck
the only trouble is that you have a very friendly, warm voice.